You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standick here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Excited to be talking to you guys. It's a Sunday night, less than 24 hours until the Wizards open up a super duper early West Coast road trip, or I guess it's a Western Conference road trip. I don't think Denver, their first stop is actually on the West Coast. I'm not great at geography, but, you know, pretty sure that's I'm right about that. Four-game trip starts in Denver, includes Golden State. We'll preview the game a little bit and talk about the trip with Wizards backup point guard Tim Frazier. I commandeered Tim before the Wizards got out of town, so we'll get his take on what's to come. Also, I feel like with these first two recaps, post-game recaps that I did with Todd Divas, I think we were fair and honest about what we said. But, you know, I could probably sense that maybe a little focusing too much on some of the things that were going right or some of the things in question. So I'm going to bring up some of the positives to take away from these first two games, a couple stats to drop on you guys. Also, we'll talk about some NBA news today that maybe pertains to the Wizards. That would be too much of a stretch. But maybe, I already can tell this, has some people thinking, maybe the Wizards could get involved with the situation. We'll talk about that and some podcast announcements, news to make. Well, I'll do that at the end of the podcast. All right, so before I get to the Tim Frazier interview and look ahead to this trip, a couple of things I want to just sort of note with regards to the first two games. Actually, let me throw in one other thing, just a quick mention. The Wizards have decided, in no surprise to anybody, to exercise the fourth-year option on Kelly Oubre's contract. This was always going to happen. This was not a Jan Vesely situation. Oubre has shown to be, viable, helpful. Maybe isn't the, we're not putting him in the All-Star game yet. Not saying he's consistent enough to be counted on, but we continue to see some positive signs. So they were going to do it. They did. And, one less thing to worry about. Not that any of us were worrying about that. But anyway, Kelly Oubre will be sticking around at least for another year. All right. Now let's get to some of these notes that I mentioned here with regards to kind of where some positive things to take away from the opening two games. First off, let's go to the lineup here. Now, we've mentioned, of course, that this is not breaking news. Markieff Morris out. He is currently not available. So the Wizards have been in two games. They've had two different players starting at the forward spot next to Otto Porter. Game one, it was Jason Smith. He was the power forward with Otto at the three. In the second game, you had Otto at the four with Kelly Oubre at the three. Now, that lineup with Otto and Oubre, Marcin Gortat, John Wall, Bradley Beal, last year it was among the most successful in the entire NBA. Just to point out how successful it was last year, the top NBA lineup, and it's the top five-man lineup in the entire league with at least 200 minutes in terms of net rating was a lineup, you might have heard of these guys, Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala, Klay Thompson. The second lineup, all of those guys except take out Andre Iguodala and put in Zaza Pachulia. Okay, Golden State, pretty good. Number three on that list, John Wall, Bradley Beal, Marcin Gortat, Otto Porter, Kelly Oubre Jr. The Wizards, who had a net rating of 17.4 in exactly 200 minutes, offensive rating 117.6, defense 100.2. That's pretty good across the board. other than Golden State, the Wizards had the best five-man lineup in the league. I bring that up because it is unbelievably stupid to even talk about any of the stats in the NBA so far after two or three games. Right? I mean, that's, defines silliness. But we're going to be a little bit silly. And here's why we're going to be a little bit silly. Because the Wizards, their five-man lineup right now is doing work again. That same group. Now, some teams have played three games. So, like the Minnesota Timberwolves, they played three games. The group with the Wizards, with Oubre in the starting lineup, has played the second most minutes of any five-man group in the league so far. And the Wizards have only had it for two games. Third on that list, I'll come back to the Wizards. Number one on the list is Minnesota, with essentially it looks like their starting lineup. They are a net rating of plus 3.4. Third on the list, the Warriors, their starting lineup, plus 1.8. Fourth on the list, Oklahoma City, their starting lineup, minus 9.6. Fifth on the list, Milwaukee. Again, I'm reading it off of minutes played. Milwaukee, their lineup, starting lineup, minus 15 net rating. Detroit's starting lineup, who the Wizards just played against, a minus 11.2, and so on. So most of those were negative, but the ones that were positive were just over. The Wizards, in 44 minutes, a plus 25.5 with that lineup with Kelly Oubre out there along with the other four starters. That is, again, small sample size, but seeing as how this was a lineup that succeeded last year, it works out, it's working out nicely. Again, I asked Oubre this week, what is it about that lineup that works well? And basically, it's, what you would imagine. That with him out there, with Otto, with Wall and Beal in particular, they've got guys who can switch defensively all over the place. And they've got the ability to get out on the break when opportunity strikes. I mean, that's the best thing about Oubre right now, I would say. We talk so much about what he can do defensively. His ability to get out in the open court and attack and run with John Wall, that is big. He's got those long arms. So, anyway, point being even without Marquise Morris, they do have a five-man group that's working. But where Marquise Morris is hurting them, of course, is defensively his presence isn't there from a pure depth standpoint. He's not there. And, when you put Oubre with the starters, and that lessens the second unit and so on. So, this is not the fix. You want Marquise Morris back in the starting lineup. Just point being, this was a lineup that worked very well last year. It is working again this year. And sort of speaking about that, the Wizards are, it hasn't quite felt like their offense has been humming in these first two games, and yet they scored 120 and 115 points. That's obviously going to get the job done. And they're doing it despite not taking a ton of threes. They're averaging under 20 per game. Last year they averaged 24.8. They just haven't been firing them up yet. Now, part of it is also they haven't had Marquise Morris. They didn't have Jason Smith. Basically, they've only had Jason Smith for 7 minutes this year. Otto and Beal are it's only taking about 3.5. That's below what they were doing last year. I mean, Oubre is taking the most on the team at 4 a game. But one way that they are making hay right now is getting to the free throw line. The Wizards in two games are attempting 36.5 free throws a game. Last year, they averaged 17.3 makes. They're making 29.5 now. So they're getting essentially an extra 12 points right now from the free throw line with even more opportunities. They're taking advantage of them. They're shooting 81% from the free throw line. Wall and Beal in particular are getting there. 11.5 free throw attempts per game for Beal, which is hilarious in the sense that prior to last year and even including last year, so much of the talk was how Beal needs to do a better job of getting to the line. He's been doing that and then some. And Wall getting there as well. I saw somebody on Twitter, I think, made this mention to me when Reggie Jackson was complaining after the Wizards beat the Pistons about how basically the refs were helping out the Wizards and it was tough to defend the Wizards based on how things were being called. And somebody pointed out to me, hey, great, that means it sounds like the Wizards are finally starting to get superstar calls. I don't know, maybe. That's interesting. I mean, the fact that their Wall's always on the attack and Beal's doing a better job of that is probably the more sustainable part of it, the more important part of it. But, you know, either way, getting to the free throw line is such a big deal, something they just have not been taking advantage of as much. You know, again, in part because Beal doesn't, hasn't always been great at that. Same with Otto and so on. By the way, just the three-point percentage, the Wizards are at 30.8 through the first two games. Beal and Porter are both about 29% from deep. Jody Meeks is hitting 60% of his threes, but he's about the only one who's doing much there. So anyway, key note, even though the offense has not been, you know, clicking, they're still scoring a ton of points, and getting to the free throw line is probably the primary reason for that. So that's a big development. If it's sustainable, then that's going to be a huge deal for the Wizards down the stretch. All right, let's get to our interview here with Wizards backup point guard Tim Frazier. I talked to Tim, I think primarily we did this conversation the morning of the Pistons game, so the Wizards had not yet played their second game. So if there's any comments or anything that sort of, we talked before the game, doesn't know that much. Fun, good conversation. Here is Tim Frazier helping me take a look ahead at this Western Conference road trip. All right, we're here with Tim Frazier. The Wizards are got one more home game, then they're heading out west. You are I'm considering you the Western Conference expert since you're the free agent that came in who played in the West last year. First of all, how unusual is it to have a road trip this early, especially when you're going to go all the way to a different side of the country? Does that kind of mess you guys up at all, or is it just it is what it is? Just get ready.
It is what it is. It's, you know, it's part of the season. 82 games. You go out west. You know, teams out west come out east. You know, it's just part of the the journey of being an NBA player and NBA team. So I don't think it's going to mess us up, and we get a opportunity to catch some guys in the West early, you know, so we want to use that as, you know, to our advantage.
So I'm hitting you up before you guys go face Detroit. I know that's where your mind's at, yep. So I'm sure you guys aren't even totally looking ahead to the scouting report, but since it's so early in the season, I'm sure you had thought about a little bit about going to these teams out West, and obviously some of the matchups are interesting, in particular, at least from my perspective, to get the two rookie point guards, Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox, with the Lakers and the Kings, respectively. How much do you know about those guys? Like right now, did you watch him in college a lot? Like how do you start building a scouting report on a rookie?
Honestly, I haven't. I didn't watch much college basketball, so I haven't really seen. I know the De'Aaron Fox because he's from the Houston area, Texas area, so I've heard about him, seen some of the highlights and stuff. And also, obviously, you hear about the Lonzo Ball, just obviously his father and all that, and just all the publicity he brings to the program and the publicity he's just had around. So that's pretty much I know about him as far as their games go. I still gotta take it game by game. Like we got the game tonight, and then I think we got a couple of days before we get to LA and SAC.
With regards to Ball, even if you don't know that familiar with his individual game, you obviously, like you said, heard about the hype for however many months it's now been with his dad and all that. When you're around players, guys on this team or other teams, do you get the sense that people are like kind of anxious, or kind of excited to get at that kid, just to support, like, hey, welcome to the league, Rook, because you guys gotten so much attention? Or
I don't know if guys, certain guys are like that. Obviously, you saw last night Pat Beverly was like that, and he's been waiting for that matchup probably all summer, but or since the schedule came out. But I don't know about it. As for our guys, I think, we just take it game by game. We've been most of our guys have been here, played against, some of the best point guards in the league. Obviously these are rookies coming in, so, they're not going to take them lightly. But at the same time, I don't know if they're getting worked up or excited about playing against, these guys just yet. I'm sure in years to come, if they're able to become great players and then down the line, yeah.
First game on the trip is against Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting backcourt. Gary Harris, Murray, Emmanuel Mudiay, from your experience going up against those guys, what kind of stands out to you as you get ready to go into that matchup?
Well, those guys play hard. They're young talents that play hard, play with confidence, and I think that's huge as far as being a young team. And I think, they got great bigs, they jokers that Mason, that are able to you know, deliver those guys the ball, and they're able to play off the ball where they don't have to do as much. And so I think that benefits them a lot, man. They got a great coach team. Obviously, they got the altitude up there. It makes, it helps them out as well. But, you know, I think they just play hard. I think that's the biggest thing. I know they got Will Barton coming off the bench. You know, Will's a huge spark for them.
You always hear about the mile high situation, the challenge adjusting to the altitude. I'm somebody who, as the out of shape guy, walking up the two flights of steps from the garage here up to this level makes me winded. Does that really affect you guys, guys in great shape, or is that sort of myth that we?
The first time out, you know what I mean? You go out there and you start up and down, and then after your first time out, you get your second win. I think it's harder in those certain situations and with the altitude, but that's everywhere here. You know, every time the first game, I mean, your first time out on the court, that first time you up and down, like you're going to be adrenaline's pumping at the beginning of the game. But after that, you know, you calm down, first time out, you ever, you know, to relax and get used to it.
And just lastly, speaking of like adrenaline pumping, on this trip is Golden State. Obviously, they're the team that everybody's chasing in the NBA right now. Does the adrenaline get pumping a little bit more going up against them because it is, or is that almost sort of the key to the game on some level, is just keep it, that, hey, it's just the next game, it's not the biggest game?
It's both. You know, still, it'll be one, it'll be six games in. I think we'll play them, so it'll still be early. But obviously, anytime you get to play the champions, you know, obviously, your adrenaline is going to be pumping. You're going to be excited to play because they, you know, they have something that you want. You know, they're the champions this year, and you want to, we want to be champions this year coming up. So, you know, we want to continue. So anytime you're able to play them, we play them, especially at Golden State where it's loud and sold out and so much, you know, going on there. You know, obviously, you want to play your best. So, obviously, the adrenaline be pumping. But like I said, the guys here, man, they've been here before. Playing game sevens in the playoff, big-time games on the road, big-time games here against Cleveland. You know, every time they play, it's always a big-time game. So.
Last question. We talked in training camp about the idea of you going up against John every day in practice, and that's got to be a good thing to go up against that talent. He and Steph Curry seem like completely different type of players. What's the biggest challenge going up from practicing as John to actually having going against Steph Curry in a game?
Oh, well, I've got my taste last year, you know, obviously playing against him when I was in New Orleans. So, you know, sometimes you got to just try to live with the shots that he takes. And I hope that he missed, but obviously he's a phenomenal time when he's in MVP. Plays hard, makes tremendous shots. They play well as a team, and they should just come out there and try to limit each player, try to slow them down as much as possible. And at the other end, you got to make them guard. They can guard you, and I think John will do a tremendous job with that. And they'll figure out ways. That, you know, we have three guards right now, our starting three guards that, you know, you got to guard. So, you know, we have to figure out some way where he's going to have to be able to guard somebody. It's either Brad, John, or Otto.
Awesome. Tim, appreciate it. Best of luck on the road trip, man. Get some rest when you can.
Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, there you have it. Wizards backup point guard, Tim Frazier. You know what? I didn't say right at the top, and I meant to say this, but for those of you who are on Twitter or follow the Locked On Wizards Twitter feed, you can follow me at Ben Standig. If you want to follow the Locked On Wizards feed, it is, I believe it's at Locked On Wizards. You'd think I would know this by now, but I don't look at it all the time. In any event, our friend Rashad Mobley from truthaboutit.net was going to come on. Something came up for him, and he had to get canceled, and we'll get him on in an upcoming podcast. But I asked people for questions for Rashad and I, and one of them came from Dan Barish at DM Barish asking, what is wrong? I don't know, what's up with Tim Frazier? Hasn't been playing that great so far. What's up with that? And, you know, I guess I would say a couple things. One, let's not forget he was dealing with a groin injury during preseason, so, you know, I did not think to ask him in that moment. I guess I should have, but, you know, where is he, 100% or not? I'm sure he would tell me he was, but as most of these guys would. But, you know, so maybe there's a little bit about that. But, you know, look, I don't necessarily know if I think that Tim Frazier has played poorly in the sense of, like, boy, everything is set up for him to do a great job and he's not taking advantage of it. You know, again, the first game, Scott Brooks essentially just went straight bench guys together. And, you know, looking at this bench, it's a point that Todd Dybas and Adam Rubin and others have made as well, that, you know, they don't have sort of a go-to scorer. Unless Oubre truly develops into one, he's not there yet. They don't have a go-to scorer right now. So when you look at a guy like Frazier, his job is to help run, you know, get the flow going, but he's not necessarily, you know, dictating terms per se. So he's, you know, he's driving left, he's juking right, he's throwing the crazy pass, and all of a sudden somebody's getting an open three. He's running the offensive flow, and then when the ball gets to different people, you know, it's, you know, what can they do with it from there? And so then in the second game, you had Otto Porter out there with this, with the second unit, no, instead of Kelly Oubre. And I think those two in the second quarter in particular had some good spots. But, you know, the I guess my point is that when Marquise Morris comes back, Scott Brooks, especially the way, if Otto Porter, you know, if what we saw particularly in that second game is real, that he can help, you know, carry the offense to a certain degree when he's in there with the second unit. You know, between Wall, Beal, Otto, and Morris, you know, that kind of gives Brooks like four options to sort of put there with that second unit. And if that's the case, now Tim Frazier has somebody who can, he can lean on, who he can feed the ball to, who can help set up, and now all of a sudden things are a little bit better. So we'll see. It's early in the year. I would agree that, you know, I don't think he's been a big spark yet, but, you know, I don't think it's all that bad, to some degree. I'll come back to the backup point guard in just a quick second, but just to get to, the Denver Nuggets and what they are about, here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Obviously, Denver's a really interesting team. I think I picked them to go finish as high as, I think, fifth in the Western Conference, which, you know, is not nothing when you consider, you know, last year they didn't make the playoffs, right? But I, you know, look, they add Paul Millsap, a guy obviously Wizards fans are certainly familiar with from the playoffs last year and then a couple years prior. You know, Millsap is an all-star power forward. It's funny, in that conversation of all the players that went from east to west, I always seem to forget to mention Millsap. Mentioned Carmelo, mentioned Paul George, mentioned Jimmy Butler. Kind of forget Millsap. That's bad on my part if that's the case, because Paul Millsap is a force. Right now he's averaging 18.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, shooting 50% from the field, 37% from distance. You know, he's, we all know what he can do. He can shoot from outside. He's got enough beef to go inside. He's not going to be intimidated, and he's been a problem for the Wizards in the past. It's one of the having Marquise Morris on some level, it was almost like the Wizards got Marquise Morris to deal with Paul Millsap on some basic level. And, for the most part, he did a pretty good job last year. Now Millsap goes to Denver to be not just a veteran leader, but to really, you know, give them a true, stabilizing force there. Because Denver's got a lot of young, interesting pieces. Gary Harris, 23-year-old two guard who just signed a big contract extension. He's averaging 15.5 a game. He's only 23. The guy who then you got Jamal Murray, the other starting guard. He's a 20-year-old, one of those Kentucky kids that left early. Look at the end of their bench. Juan Hernan Gomez, Trey Lyles, Malik Beasley, all 22 or under, at not even counting Emmanuel Mudiay, who's, it looks like, I guess he's, you can say he's their, you know, third guard off the bench, more or less. But then, of course, there's the 22-year-old that I think I said during the offseason that that of the players that I would want to see the most this year, I think I may have said Jokic. I can't remember. Is Jokic, Lonzo Ball? I don't know. But in any event, Nikola Jokic, if you've seen the highlights by now, if you're into the NBA, you've seen the highlights of his passing wizardry. It's just stupendous what this guy can do from the high post as a big man. He's got a, you know, Magic Johnson, Steve Kerr, or Steve Nash flair for those passes. I'm not saying he's as good as those guys. He's not doing it off the dribble. He's doing it typically stationary. Those guys are doing it at 100 miles an hour. But he's got, you know, that type of flair. He's averaging, he leads Denver in assists. He's averaging 7.5 assists. Again, we're talking about a, you know, big man inside. You know, this is not a, you know, point guard or a wing forward or even like LeBron, who's out more in the perimeter. We're talking about a center who does work out of the high post a lot, but he's making moves. But that said, he's not exactly crushing right now with his own offense. He's only scored 7 points in two games. He's shooting 23.1% from the field, 3 of 13 overall. He is getting rebounds though. He's averaging 11.5. He's averaging about 10 rebounds a game. Jokic against Gortat is going to be interesting. One thing that was pointed out to me last year, Denver was a little more of a physical team than the one we're probably going to see Monday, because you had a guy like Nurkić. I'm blanking it. Nurkić is now up over in Portland. Sorry about that. Denver needed to break up their center logjam. Nurkić was the more bruising of the two, but they went with Jokic for good reason. He's got great skill set. Somebody else pointed out to me, it's not exactly for an NBA player, it's a little doughy, I guess you could say. I'm not saying that, but he's not exactly the most cut NBA player, but whatever, he's a very good player, and Gortat should have a strength advantage, but maybe an aggression advantage in that matchup. So I'll be curious to see if Gortat can get Jokic off rhythm a little bit, which will be key because they run so much of the offense through him that's going to be a challenge. But then I come back to the Paul Millsap thing. It was one thing against the Pistons for the Wizards to go with Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre against Tobias Harris and Stanley Johnson. Two guys who I don't really view them as taking you into the post. Well, Millsap will do whatever you need to do. He'll take you inside. He'll take you outside. You go with small ball lineup against him, which is essentially what an Oubre Otto thing will do. He will go inside and try to take advantage of you. You go with a bigger player. If Jason Smith can go, then Millsap will go outside and use his shooting and quickness on the perimeter to get into a good position there. So an interesting matchup, to say the least. The Nuggets are 1-1 on the very young season. They are a team that makes a lot of threes. Let me rephrase that. They make a high percentage of their threes collectively. They're shooting 40.4% from deep, which is fifth in the NBA as of today. But they're not taking that many. They're only attempting they're ranking 22nd in the league right now in three-point attempts. So effective, but not necessarily chuckers from deep. And, of course, if you have Jokic helping get cutters open around the rim, you don't necessarily need to. Not a team that's going to block a ton of shots, but a team that and not even necessarily a great rebounding team outside of Jokic, but they're efficient enough, and they can certainly score. Very interesting young team. I'm excited to watch them play. Speaking of watching them play, this is the announcement I was going to make. I guess I'll just do it now. I'm actually going to have to watch it on delay. The Redskins are playing on Monday Night Football, duty calls, and I'm actually going to be at the Redskins game in Philadelphia, which is going on the same time as the Nuggets game. But we do post game recaps here. So filling in for me will be his first maiden voyage. Mr. Todd Dybas will be filling in for the Locked On Wizards podcast. I'm sure he will do a fantastic job. I'm sure he will make fun of me in the process, and hopefully he's not too fantastic at doing that. But excited to hear what Todd has to say about Wizards Nuggets, and I will put that up for you guys on some point after the game. Last but not least, quick note here. The Wizards, I mentioned there was some NBA news earlier today. Phoenix Suns point guard Eric Bledsoe goes on Twitter today. Twitter can be a dangerous place for people, for any of us, if you're having a moment. If you're having a moment, Twitter can be a dangerous place. And at the point that Eric Bledsoe tweeted out, quote, "I don't want to be here," it seemed like perhaps he was having a moment, right? Because you didn't need to be a character in the Da Vinci Code trying to figure out the case here. The Phoenix Suns have been an utter disaster so far. It's not just that they're 0-3, their point differential right now is a minus 30. They are getting destroyed, and Bledsoe, I guess, made it clear he didn't want to be here. And then soon after that, though, the Suns actually made a move. They fired their coach, Earl Watson, which is kind of crazy to do it 3 games into the year. Like, what, you didn't figure out what was going on, good or bad, prior to the season starting? But, okay, in any event, based on the coaching fire, I'm going to assume, I could be wrong here, that even if Bledsoe truly wants out, that maybe he'll give it a pass to figure out what happens now that they've made a coaching change. I think one of the assistants, Jay Triano, took over. So I got a question immediately on Twitter and was talking to some people about this. Could the Wizards make a play for Bledsoe if he's in fact available? I think there's two things to consider here. One, if the Wizards were to somehow acquire Eric Bledsoe, of course, one of John Wall's former teammates at Kentucky, the Wizards, not the Warriors, would have the best three-guard rotation in the NBA with Wall, Beal, and Bledsoe. There's really no doubting that. But the question is, does it make sense for, even if Bledsoe is available, does it make sense for the Wizards to go get him? I would argue not so much. And this is my basic argument for this. First of all, it would cost his salary is $15 million basically for each of the next 2 years. In order for that to work, the Wizards would have to trade likely Gortat or Mahimi, two players that a rebuilding team are not interested in. And then from there, maybe it's a first round pick, maybe it's Kelly Oubre, something like that. The first round pick obviously doesn't make any difference with the current team, just means it would be for the fourth time in 5 years the Wizards would not have had a first round pick. So there's that. And then, you know, what would, you know, if you're trading other players from the current roster, what are you doing there? If you're getting Bledsoe, but you're trading, you know, front court players against Gortat, Mahimi, Kelly Oubre, whatever it may be, you know, now you're taking some bodies away from the front court and adding to the back court without moving Meeks or Frazier. Again, this is all hypothetical I'm throwing out there. But the larger point I guess I would have is that if the Wizards are going to make this kind of move, I want a player who I can use late in the games if needed, because you want to have as much versatility as possible. This was part of my issue with the Mahimi signing. Forget whether you think Mahimi is any good or not. Forget whether you think they overpaid. Regardless of any of that, there was nowhere for Mahimi to play in which he could play ever on the court with Marcin Gortat. They're both two old school interior centers. What that meant that Mahimi, despite paying him like he could be your third front court player, you couldn't play him like one because he couldn't play with Gortat, so he could never serve as the backup power forward, which is why he's not starting now, even with Markieff Morris out. Now, Bledsoe, it's not the exact same issue. He can play with Bradley Beal without issue. He can play with John Wall. That wouldn't be much of an issue either, but he's only 6'1". Now, there's all kinds of circumstances and all kinds of ways, and you know, I get it. Sometimes you just have to get the players and figure out the rest. But my only point would be, can you realistically play Eric Bledsoe, John Wall, and Bradley Beal together in meaningful games? I don't really think that's the case. Like, for the Wizards to make a move, if we're really talking about this 2 games into the season, any move the Wizards can make right now should be realistically with the thought of how does this beat Cleveland, right? I mean, I had the Wizards second in the East even before the Gordon Hayward move, but before the Gordon Hayward injury, now that that occurred, you know, I'm not going to say the Wizards are a lock for second. Toronto's still in the mix. You know, I'm not going to throw away Boston, Milwaukee, you know, with Giannis. He's obviously, you know, crazy good. So we'll see. You know, other things happen. But the Wizards are not playing right now to get the second place. This isn't like last year where, you know, they acquired Bojan Bogdanović in part to dump Andrew Nicholson's salary, but in part to fix a terrible bullpen bench, that had almost no chance of helping, last year. And the Wizards were in position to make the playoffs. We all knew that was going to happen. The question was, would they definitively stay as a, have home court advantage, and where would they match up and all. But we're beyond that. If they're going to make a big move, that big move needs to be made with the thought of taking down Cleveland. And I just don't see that Eric Bledsoe, a very talented player, would automatically do that in the sense that at 6-1, if you play Bledsoe, Beal, and Wall together, that means essentially Wall would have to guard the other team's three. Well, if you're playing Cleveland and Cleveland goes with the starting front court of LeBron James, Jay Crowder, and Kevin Love, that means Wall has to guard one of those three guards. That's either LeBron, who's a ridiculously, essentially the best player in the world, who's much bigger than Wall physically. You have Jay Crowder, who's a very physical player. Obviously, Kevin Love's not even a factor. So, does that work? I don't think so. And even if you flip it the other way, LeBron can deal with guarding Bradley Beal if he has to, or Jay Crowder can. So, I'm not saying you don't make that. If there's some offer presented to you around the trading deadline, then and Bledsoe is the best you can get, even if it's not exactly a perfect fit with the roster to some degree, okay, maybe you make that move. And by the way, I'm not done on Meeks and Tim Frazier. Bledsoe's better than them. There's no arguing there. I'm just saying I don't think it's a perfect fit, and especially so early in the season. I'm just saying, again, nobody's suggesting this is actually happening. People are asking me, what do I think could happen? The real bottom line is, though, that a package of, let's just say, Gortat, Oubre, or Gortat in a first, or Mahimi, whatever, I just don't think that that's getting it done. Other teams have more assets than the Wizards do. So for me, it basically just starts right there. But if you're going to have to gut the bench to make the move, and then you're going to tell me that realistically it's going to be really hard, only in some circumstances can you really get Bledsoe out on the court for the last, 5 to 8 minutes of a game. To me, that just doesn't work. It could work in January and March. I get that. But, for me at this point, if I'm the Wizard, I'm not making any move that doesn't help me get better against Cleveland. And maybe I'm wrong, but Eric Bledsoe wouldn't necessarily do that for me. Again, by the way, it's not offered. I'm having fun. One last thing. When the Markieff Morris deal went down, a lot of people thought, I say a lot of people, but some people I know, some people on Twitter, thought the Wizards were suckers. They got taken by Phoenix. The Phoenix was a smart team. They got out of the Markieff Morris bad contract, bad guy situation to get a first round pick, yada, yada, yada. Well, look, Markieff Morris, he was no angel. His attitude didn't help the scene, but, there's a lot more going on in Phoenix than just Markieff Morris, as evidenced by the fact that we just had this conversation about Bledsoe, that they fired their coach after three games, so on and so on. Phoenix is sort of a semi-destination kind of city because of the weather and all that kind of stuff. And, they haven't been able to get enough pieces in recent years. I think the ownership over there is a little bit dicey, but point being is just simply that Markieff Morris, getting him has worked out well for the Wizards. Things haven't been so great for the Suns ever since they made that move. But just in general, this is a fire coach three games into a season. That's dysfunction, people. That's what dysfunction looks like. And it's not happening with the Wizards. It's happening with the team that they made not just one, but two trades with. They also, of course, acquired Marcin Gortat for a first round pick, a deal that definitely was won by the Wizards. Technically, I guess the Suns could, we'll see what happened because the pick was traded, the Markieff Morris pick was traded around and yada, yada, yada. We'll see what happens. But, in any event, I'm just rambling here. So, Bledsoe, I get it. I understand why people would be interested, but realistically, both in terms of assets and the Wizards, what they have doesn't seem, to me, I would wait is all I basically am saying. All right, let me stop rambling. Let me end it there. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks to Tim Frazier for his time. If you've got any thoughts, hit me up on Twitter at Ben Standig. Hit me up on email, bstandig1@gmail.com. And, of course, subscribe on iTunes. And, again, tomorrow night after Wizards Nuggets, our friend Todd Dybas will be on to talk about that game. All right, appreciate it. Until next time, see ya. Everybody just Beal gets open for three. Dagger! Home run, off balance shot. Dagger! What you doing? Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you...
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get 2 free phones with twice as much memory.
Really? Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get 2 free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch 2 lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.